Good morning. Theologian and first century Jewish scholar Amy Jill Levine writes, "We should be careful not to let the parables become only simple platitudes. Parables are more than just moral statements. They are designed to challenge, to entertain, and to encourage our imagination." This one is challenging, to say the least. At least it was to me. Levine also says about the parables that what makes them difficult is that they challenge us to look into the hidden aspects of our own values, of our own lives. It is easy to label the Pharisee as sanctimonious or hypocritical, or even self-righteous. We are, after all, slightly biased towards the Pharisees because throughout the Gospels, they are the ones who constantly contradict everything that Jesus does or says, even to one point of accusing him of acting for Beelzebub. It's so much easier to sympathize with the tax collectors because feeling so low, here he is, so brought down by the things in life that make him feel less than worthy. However, to condemn the Pharisee and to identify with the tax collector is to do the same thing as the Pharisee is doing. If we judge the Pharisee, it's no less than what he's doing to the tax collector. So rather than condemn him, I found myself comparing myself to him. While sympathizing with the tax collector, I myself have been thankful that I am not like other people or have some of the same problems that some of them have. As a matter of fact, last night, in and out of the rain as we ran errands, no umbrella or hat, I was wet and I was cold and I was gripey about being in the rain. I found myself giving thanks that I was not like some of the people I know who were actually spending the night in the rain because they had nowhere else to go. There is a difference in praying for someone's well-being or praying for things to get better and giving thanks that we're not actually like those people. The Pharisee claims righteousness based on the good things he does, and he does do good things. However, he relies on his understanding of what is good. He's comfortable being in charge. The tax collector is obviously not comfortable. He knows that he is seriously lacking in whatever it is that is required, that he has sinned, and that he has fallen short of the glory of God. Yet, he turns to God and relies fully on the grace of God. To the Pharisee, there is no such thing as a gray area. It's all black and white, good and bad, righteous and unrighteous. He's thankful to be on that side that he sees as right. The tax collector seems quite desperate. He isn't concerned about sides or being worthy or even less than worthy, only that he is lacking and he needs help. So he turns to God, depending entirely upon God's mercy and the promise of grace. What hidden aspect lies within the Pharisee's thanksgiving that he is not like this other one? Does he see himself as special, above this man who is praying at the same time that he is? Or is there something that he fears? He doesn't even seem to realize that he is judging the other man and considering him less than worthy of being respected. He fails to realize that God's love is so all-encompassing, capable of seeing past our failings and into our potentials, regardless of our current circumstances. Maybe he just doesn't trust God to fully forgive him. Jesus is telling us that God's love is so expansive, there is no one better than the other, because we are all loved beyond our understanding. Humility helps us to understand this love. The Pharisee doesn't seem to have much humility. Our culture teaches us that we must be strong, that there is shame in weakness. If we're too humble, someone will take advantage of us. If we suffer physically or mentally, we're not productive members of society. If we can't handle the pressures of life, we must be weak. Survival of the fittest and all that. The weak die out and the strong survive. Shame and stigma are two of the weapons used to separate us, the weak from the poor, from the strong. There are many ways we use to shame the victim, to blame that victim. Women who are raped or abused, teenagers killed by gun violence, people who are addicted, people who are homeless or unhoused, LGBTQ people. What did they do to bring on this punishment? For surely they did something wrong. Are they believable as victims? Do we blame them for what has happened to them? I remember my great aunt-in-law when I was little. Our family gatherings were very big and very loud, lots of laughter and many big voices. My grandmother said that Vita had a weak constitution, which meant she wasn't as strong as the rest of them. She had issues. She would escape the noisy surrounding and find solace in the bedroom, one of the bedrooms. I don't know what her condition was. I never was privy to that. Only that I heard the whispers, and I knew that they considered her less than them. And they were thankful they were not like her. For a good part of my life, I lived with that understanding of weakness and shame. What it taught me was that I must be strong regardless, and that to be less than was to be less than. I was arrogant and ignorant. As domestic violence, the resulting anxiety, self-medication, and addiction touched someone that I loved, I learned what strength really was. Strength is not born out of shame. I learned that strength is the ability to endure in any circumstance, even when to survive means to suffer. The stigma that we place on mental health, addiction, homelessness, LGBTQ, all of these things, so many other things wear on the stamina of a person. Our culture makes it easy to victimize people. We insinuate that the outcomes might be different had that victim acted differently. All manner of things we can say, blaming the victim for not taking hold of their life, not doing the right thing, being in the wrong time, in the wrong space at the wrong time. It indicates something for which that person should be ashamed. Yet we all know stuff happens, bad things happen. And when trauma happens, we find ways to cope. For each one of us, our ability to cope is different. Arrogance can be one coping skill, just as contriteness can be. Over the years, there have been things that I believed I was strong enough to handle. I found the excuse that there were others who had far more to bear than I, and they were taking care of their business, so surely I could too. Even in my times of trial, I was ignorant. I see the Pharisee in today's gospel as arrogant. He was honorable, doing all the right things. He's prayerful. He pays his tithes. He fasts. He's not a thief or a rogue or an adulterer. And then he says, thank God he is not like any of these people or even the guy who works for Rome and takes people's money. Was that the tax collector stigma? Was the Pharisee arrogant in thinking he was better than the tax collector simply because he had a different way of making money? Again, I ask, what shadows lurked in the Pharisee's life that allowed him to be thankful he was not like this other person? The tax collector had to have been a good enough guy. He had gone through the same purity rituals as did the Pharisee to be in that same space. Plus, he was repentant, calling upon God to forgive him, while the Pharisee relied only on his own merits, thanking God only for the fact that he was not like one of them. What the Pharisee could not see was that it is in our brokenness that God comes into our lives. Our arrogance and our self-righteousness help us believe that we are a tower of strength. We rely on ourselves to avoid the stigmas of life. Yet there is so much more that God will and can do if we rely on God alone as our strength. I've come to realize that while I always relied on God to help me some, I kept myself above the reproach and shame, relying instead on my ability to be aloof, to claim everything was fine and that all would be well. This arrogance is cloaked in what Thomas Merton calls the false self. Our false self wants us to believe that we can exist outside the realm of God's will, outside the reality of community, of being together, of working together, of taking care of one another. Like the Pharisee, I comforted myself by claiming and thinking that there was nothing so big I couldn't handle all alone. Yet, Merton said also, the secret of my identity is hidden in the love and mercy of God. I believe that the tax collector must have understood this. This is the reason why he relied on God alone. I believe that I am in the process of understanding this. These realities that we go through in our lives are not things that we can pigeonhole. We cannot box off vital pieces of our lives and expect the whole to be healthy. Stigmas and shame cause us to isolate ourselves, whether it's mental health, abuse, addiction, any number of whatever things that we can name. These are societal illnesses and ones that we are stronger for tending to together. We cannot continue to shame the victims, even when the victim is very close to us or even ourselves. Emphasize as we might with the Pharisee, because we knew what he was doing was he was trying to do what was right, we cannot do it alone. The psalmist sings, our strength is in God alone. We are pilgrims along the way, even as we go through the desolate valleys. We will find all that we need together. We find our strength in God alone. The definition of a liminal space is the time between what was and what's next. It's that space of transition waiting for the unknown to be revealed. This is the space in which transformation takes place. It's that space where we learn that we have been formed by our joys and by our sorrows, by our successes and by our brokenness. What was is history. What is next is the future. All that there is right now. And that, I believe, is where God is always. And it's where we all can be with God together. Amen.